Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the On Wall Street Dr. Alden Cass conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Instructions will be given at that time. If you should require operator assistance during the call, please press star then zero, and an operator will answer you offline. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to our host, Robert Hertzberg, Editorial Director of On Wall Street Magazine. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, operator. And thank you, everyone, for joining us for the first of three teleconferences by Dr. Alden Cass, the president of Catalyst Strategies Group and therapist to many, many high-powered advisors and executives in New York. First of all, let me say that the response to this teleconference has been really terrific, overwhelming. It's one of the best responses we've had to a teleconference, which is a clear sign of the level of interest in the material and also in the reputation of Dr. Cass, whom you may have seen in other venues. Anyway, all this gives me personally a sense of real excitement about today's program. One order of business. There's an updated PDF of today's presentation, which many of you may need to download because there have been some changes late last week and you want to have these slides. So I'm going to give you a URL and it will be a very quick process to download it. It's www.onwallstreet.com/Cass, C-A-S-S, dot PDF, as in PDF file. So please do take a moment to retrieve this new material, which will help you follow today's presentation. I'll give you that address one more time. www.onwallstreet.com/Cass, C-A-S-S, dot PDF. One final note before we start, before I turn over the program to Dr. Cass. The in-person presentations that Dr. Cass does at venues like IMCA and the Silver and Zinc Institutes are typically very interactive events. The format of today's program dictates that Dr. Cass needs to be a little bit more explanatory than interactive. But there will be a few minutes toward the end of the presentation, the middle and the end, and there will be an opportunity for callers to have a chance to bring some ideas and issues to Dr. Cass's attention. And in fact, I urge you to do that because this session will be better for that, and the way it works, you'll just be providing a first name. When we get to the end, when we have time, we will have a little time for a Q&A. You can look at that as an opportunity to get some free advice from Dr. Cass on anything from making money to issues of one's love life. So with no further ado, let me turn it over to Dr. Alden Cass.
All right. Thanks a lot, Robert, and it's an honor to be asked to speak for three conferences for On Wall Street Magazine. But before I begin, I just want to preface this speech by saying, you know, that people who have seen me in the past speak at these workshops, they've seen me do it in a more interactive and in-your-face manner with the audience. And, you know, I usually try to break the ice initially by using humor or joke, but I guess because I'm not going to be able to get any feedback, positive or negative, whether I'm funny or not, I'm just going to cut right to the chase here with limited time. But also historically, financial advisors tend to get a little bit uneasy or squeamish about, you know, talking to a clinical psychologist. But I just want to put you at ease by letting you know that I'm not the typical touchy-feely psychologist who would be up here, you know, talking to you, trying to uncover some of your unconscious drives and fears stemming from early childhood, like people being picked on in eighth grade gym class or not, like, or picked last. You know, we're not here for that reason. I have a different purpose in working with high-powered execs, and I realize that you want to have the edge in your high-pressured industry. Basically, I want to supply you with the tools necessary to reach the pinnacle of your earning potential. So today, I'm here to present, you know, a modified version of my Bullish Thinking Workshop to help not only improve your productivity at work, but also to improve your quality of life so you can actually enjoy your newfound wealth and create some more opportunities for yourself. So all I ask for you over the next hour is to suspend your usual ways of thinking and think out of the box with me for the next hour. So we're going to go to this workshop now. I want you to turn to the page with a quote on it by Robert Shiller and Henry George. These are statements that emphasize the power of positive thinking in our daily work lives and how difficult it is to maintain this type of thinking in a human mind that's really wired for primarily bearish or negative thoughts. The first statement is really an important one because it's been my experience that a majority of executives in your industry tend to sit with their mistakes, their losses, and their rejections longer than they savor their successes. And, you know, the reason for this is that negative feelings and experiences tend to be more salient to us than positive ones. So you may have accomplished a worthy goal on a Monday morning at work, but this can be easily forgotten and thrown in the dumpster if anything equally as negative might occur later on that same day or during the rest of the week. So when clients come to my office, I train them to use mental anchors or images of their previous successes or highlights. For example, many of you might have nostalgic home movies or just memories, a scrapbook that you can refer to in order to relish some of your historical successes. Maybe it was Greek week arm wrestling, a high school baseball or football game that you played really well in, or a great speech that you made, or a presentation you made at work, or a client that you closed that you didn't think you could. When you're feeling those bearish thoughts creeping up after a negative event happens at the workday, it's important to grab for those anchors that we talk about. You know, sit back in your chair, close your eyes, and think about some of those great moments, those quintessential times in your life, and relish them. If you think about it and you take your time, you'll be ready to attack the problem. So, in a nutshell, these are quotes, especially the second one. Human nature is to not just be satisfied with what you have, and part of what we're doing here today with Bullish Thinking is to help you appreciate what you have, the wealth that you've obtained and the status that you've obtained in your careers. So we're going to skip through some of these slides because they're going to be used for maybe other presentations and we don't have time to go through everything today. So I'm going to ask you to skip the overview page, the top performer profiling system page, and program objectives. Also skip you've been scanned, and we're going to find ourselves on the slide what we learned from the past. And this is kind of how I got my start in working with the financial services industry, because I conducted research in 1999, which was a clinical investigation that assessed the mental health of Wall Street stockbrokers and whether or not it was correlated with financial success. And my findings were kind of alarming. And if you look at this particular page, these findings indicate, and I'll explain it to you in depth now in a minute, that individuals sampled were hampered in terms of their mental health and earning potential, and more importantly, in their quality of life. So if we look at this, what we found was that high levels of emotional exhaustion, which really means burnout, high levels of depersonalization, which is defined as an emotional callousing or, you know, kind of non-empathetic stance towards your clients and yourself, basically lacking insight in how you're feeling, high levels of depression, high levels of anxiety, and fewer hours of sleep were taken together based on a multiple regression analysis, were all strongly predictive of a higher broker's advisor's financial standing and annual salary. However, if you see beneath that, there's a thing for caring for customers equals money, and fewer hours of sleep per night, decreased sleep equals money. The two most significant predictors of success for these brokers were lower levels of depersonalization, which meant that they cared more for their clients, they were more client-centered and client-focused, and they slept less. These seem to be the two indicators for being successful. However, when you look at all the data, these brokers were on the measures of emotional exhaustion, anxiety, depression, and depersonalization. They were all at moderate to high levels, which means that although they were making money, good money at the time of the study, they could have been making more because they still had moderate to high levels of depersonalization, which we see that the lower the depersonalization, the more money they'll make. And more startling is the fact that 23% of my sample was diagnosable with clinical levels of major depression, which was compared against a 7% incidence in all males throughout the nation, which basically shows there's a lot of untreated depression, and, you know, it wasn't being dealt with, and that's pretty much
this is that research. This is also 1999 figures, so if I remember back to 1999, the market was a lot more healthy, a lot more robust than it is today.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and that is what is startling about this is people were making large sums of money, and it wasn't good enough for them. And, you know, we take it back to the quote, man is the only animal whose desires increase while being fed. Well, that was a time of irrational exuberance. People were never happy with what they were making. They wanted more. They felt untouchable. And, you know, the interesting thing was that although people who were making the most money at the time of the study were also the most, I guess, you know, dealing with the most emotional turmoil, the findings were that 8 months later we did a follow-up, and 20% of those individuals who we followed up with were no longer at their firms, which we would speculate that they burnt out, made mistakes, were fired, or just left their firm and left the industry. So that was pretty significant, I thought. So basically, these individuals trade their mental health for the pursuit of affluence. And let's see, our research, if we go to the next slide, what we learned from the past, our research also showed what behavioral indicators we would look for a successful financial advisor. So as we said before, successful brokers slept less, were emotionally connected to their clients, meaning they have low levels of depersonalization. They made at least currently about 60 to 80 calls to prospective clients daily. Back then, in 99, it was way higher. These individuals believed in themselves and their product. They managed risk better. They shrugged off minor setbacks. And then they also maintained a long-term investment strategy. Most of my top executives have at least, you know, responded. They would say they account for about 5 to 7 of these in terms of their everyday habits and what they think that they bring to the table at work. And if I had you guys all in front of me right now, I would be asking you, you know, and confront you, where do you think you are on that scale so you can improve upon that? But those are very important findings that we got, and, you know, I think that we can go on to the next page, which is behavioral paralysis in the office. And basically, in order to prepare you for the bullish thinking segment of this presentation, it's important to emphasize the under-the-radar symptoms that you or a colleague may be experiencing that could potentially damage your career or her career or his career or their quality of life. And I think because, you know, obviously my study showed that people were going to work managing millions of dollars and they weren't all right and they felt unsafe and they didn't feel like they could talk about their feelings. And there were symptoms that were highly recognizable, but no one noticed. So we have depressed mood, irritability, poor concentration, problems making confident decisions, decreased sex drive, catastrophic thinking. You know, some of you branch managers might see your employees come into your office with the smallest problem making it into a huge one. You know, a typical catastrophic thought for a broker might be, my client will never do business with me again because his portfolio had a bad first quarter. All of my clients will soon follow, and basically it's blowing little incidents into big ones. Other symptoms that you might recognize are feeling helpless at work, having trouble sleeping at night, insomnia, muscle tension, headaches, stomach aches, decreased number of calls to clients or potential investors, a difficulty getting out of bed in the morning, increased craving for stimulant drugs, such as Ritalin, using drugs like cocaine, amphetamines, or abusing alcohol or marijuana, and also being extremely self-critical of themselves for their mistakes, which my study initially showed that 96% of the financial advisors were overly critical of themselves for making mistakes, which seems to be a personality trait, and also a decrease in networking. So these are things to look out for with your employees.
Dr. Katz, I mean, some of these things are very straightforward, some of what they mean, but many people experience a little bit of depression, sadness. I mean, how do you know when it's a work-related problem?
Well, it usually rears its ugly head in the office when you see a financial advisor screaming at a client on the phone or just being overly sarcastic about them to a point of it's just inhumane. Because what you'll see is that depersonalization creeping up, which is a callousing. And they tend to blow little things into big ones, and they tend to also have a lot of problems with other employees that work around them. And that's usually the under-the-radar things that you'll see. They'll miss appointments, and they'll just be a lot less sociable, and they'll be more socially withdrawn and isolated.
Thank you.
Okay, well, typically we also do warm-ups, and in a job where we're potentially most people in your industry overuse the left hemisphere of your brains at the expense of not using the right hemisphere of your brains, we try to come up with a warm-up exercise that basically uses what we call motivational catalysts. And in talking about left brain, right brain, it's important for you to know that the left brain is, the left hemisphere of a person's brain, it's dealing with logical thought, rational thinking, taking in facts, analytical thinking, and very disciplined behavior. Whereas the right side of your brain is creative, it's emotional, it's temperamental, it's touchy-feely, and it allows you to think out of the box. So I'm not going to have time to go through these quotes, which are on the page called Motivational Catalysts by Og Mandino. It's a book that I highly recommend. It's got some really powerful quotes that empower my clients. They wake up every day at the side of their bed and they recite some of their favorite ones. But for the most part, what this exercise and coming up with your own motivational catalyst, what it does is it helps you build up the creative right side of your brain that you don't normally use at work. It allows you to, in order for you to get the cream of the crop clients, you have to be able to think outside the box. And coming up with a motivational catalyst helps inoculate you against the behavioral paralysis that we just talked about, which usually stems from the bearish thinking that enters into our world. And so basically you can hold on to these and know that this is something that you should use when you're feeling particularly burned out, and you should come up with your own personal one. So, having said that, we go to the page where you'll see a guy throwing what looks to be like a baseball through a bow and arrow, which is a target, and it says, don't aim, just throw the ball. Now, don't aim, just throw the ball is actually one of our catalysts. It's an example of a behavioral catalyst, a motivational catalyst, which when things get rough at work, it can be difficult to get out of bed in the morning and get to work. So it's important to start your day with both of your feet on the ground running rather than walking. So don't aim, just throw the ball is what we use to basically, I use this with a lot of hedge fund traders to counteract behavioral paralysis. Because they come into my office after a bad trading day or month, and they feel as if their discipline or strategy that they use is all of a sudden faulty. They appear in my office and they look like almost like a deer in headlights. And, you know, our self-defeating thoughts can sometimes overpower us and make us hesitant and fearful of taking risks. And, you know, just to use a baseball analogy, pitchers like Pedro Martinez are often taught not to aim for the catcher's glove, but to just throw the ball to a part of the plate. Sometimes it's good to stick to the basic fundamentals of your job and not think so much, because thinking can lead to pressing. And with your business, you can freeze up when clients are rattled and they call you and scream on the phone. And these clients can be rattled by short-term market gyrations, and you have to be on your game in order to put them in their place and keep them comfortable for a long sales cycle. And that's the importance of a motivational catalyst. So it's don't aim, just throw the ball, which really means don't think too much and just do what you know how to do and explain it to your clients. Okay, now it's going to be a bittersweet slide called the New York Yankees theory. So I don't know if I can get through this, but there's going to be a lot of mourning fans here in New York, as am I. The Yankees were in the playoffs for the last 10 years and won the series four times. In April 2004 and even this year, early this year, the Yankees started at a very disappointing 11-10 record. Based on historical trends of their performance that year, should the fans have been worried? Now, in 2004, no. The answer should have been no, and it was no for me this year as well, although it just came crashing down yesterday. So the theory is that all great teams, advisors, and traders go through droughts and slumps that are just temporary. The Yankees turned it around in 2004 and made it into the finals despite a subpar early season performance. And to be honest, this year, their pitching was so bad that, you know, they probably were lucky to have even gotten into the playoffs. Even though they had such a bad start, they still did turn it around for themselves. So the point of all this is that one bad outcome, streak, or slump does not predict future failure for an entire season. You know, you got to look at historical trends and past successes and outcomes to get through a down period and soar past isolated setbacks. So, sorry, this theory will be very helpful for you to manage your irate investors or clients who, and teach them how to understand brief market downturns or short streaks of performance. It's important that they understand historical market trends, relative successes against weak markets, and your track record as a successful financial advisor. Because all great teams, advisors, and so on go through slumps. And, you know, as far as, you know, don't let this one Yankee season, you know, destroy your faith in the team. This is a dynasty. So just like a top advisor who unexplainably loses a huge account, the Yankees will have to do some soul searching in the offseason to examine their success formula to see what works and what doesn't. And, you know, when you lose a big account unexplainably, that's the time that you have to look at yourself in the mirror and say, what did I do wrong and what can I improve upon? Because this loss will be temporary and we can move on. And just, you know, if you're a winner, you're going to rise to the occasion next season. And I'm confident that the Yankees as a dynasty will do the same. Okay, so we're going to skip through the train spotting and we're going to go to the slide that says bullish thinking. The first lesson in business is don't get emotional about stock. It clouds your judgment. A famous Gordon Gekko quote from the movie Wall Street. Okay. So, what is bullish thinking? That is the question. And now, just briefly, now for all of those multitaskers out there who are listening to me and still trying to get U2 tickets on sale, you know, this is the time where you should probably be focusing. So, this is the important part, guys. Bullish thinking is rooted in the principles of cognitive behavioral therapy and follows the contention that an individual's perception or belief, whether it's bullish or bearish, about a stressful or negative event can actually lead to predictable consequences or outcomes. These consequences or outcomes may be positive or negative depending on how bullish or bearish you perceive the negative event. Often these outcomes are related to an individual's physiological reactions, their emotions, their performance, or their sense of control. So bullish perceptions are positive and rational and usually based on evidence that's tangible. Bearish perceptions are often irrational and not based on evidence and based purely on emotion, negative emotion. Let's go to the action versus reaction page. You'll see two baseball outfielders fielding fly balls. Basically, I typically ask the audiences, you know, based on looking at these two individuals, the guy on the left and the guy on the right, what would you say they're each thinking and feeling at that moment? And the top five things that audiences have given me was the first guy on the left is in the ready position. They're hungry, determined, fearless, and they're saying, hit me the ball. The guy on the right is scared, back on his heels, overwhelmed, praying to avoid the ball, and saying, please don't hit me, the ball. So bullish thinking is an action-oriented self-monitoring intervention that can really help an individual transcend any work-related stressor. So outfielders in baseball are always taught to wait in the ready position, leaning forward, expecting and craving the ball to be hit to them. This action-oriented perception enables an outfielder to get a better jump on the next fly ball. If the outfielder takes a passive stance that is reactive, like the guy on the right, he'll be back on his heels, afraid of misjudging or dropping the next fly ball. He's suffering from behavioral paralysis and is trapped in a dark and ambiguous abyss. So as a financial advisor, you must always be proactive in order to anticipate how to best handle market volatility or how to precondition your clients or how to anticipate or understand and manage your client's emotional reactivity to bad news. In your business, it's important to be disciplined, and bullish thinking will help you actively control your emotions so that you can maintain a long-term investment perspective. Okay, now let's turn to the perception is everything page. And you'll see two individual financial advisors, David and Jim, sitting at their computers looking at a negative market outcome. Let's just pretend it's natural gas, a crash happening. But what is Jim, the financial advisor, doing in this picture to manage this rough market downturn that is significantly different from his counterpart, David? And the answer to that is that Jim perceives this abrupt loss or negative market outcome as a perceived challenge rather than David's view, which is of a perceived failure or sign of incompetence. As we can clearly see, Jim appears to be going through the crisis with steadiness and emotional control, while David appears to have given up and is mentally checked out for the rest of the day. Now let's return to David, the financial advisor, who has just dealt with this horrible, stressful event and has pretty much given up for the day. He slumped down onto his desk, and he's reacting to what looks to be like a victim of circumstance due to this negative market outcome. As we see, he experienced very negative consequences on the right in his physiological health, his performance at work, which has bottom line implications in terms of productivity. It will affect his bottom line and how he does, because as you see, a decrease in business meetings, deals, increase in distractibility, hesitancy, and decreased ability to handle his client's emotional reactivity. He's going to lose a lot of clients that same day, probably. He's not going to follow up with the phone calls. And it's going to also have implications in terms of his emotional state as a result of his bearish perception about the event that just occurred. You know, he's viewing the world as an amorphous, dark, and uncertain place, and he's trapped. So let's also now, Jim, on the other hand, he experienced the same market event as David. But as we see above, you know, on this chart here, he handled the stressful event with grace and perseverance by taking a different perspective, a bullish one, that challenged any of those initial negative thoughts and dealing with the uncertainty. Jim was able to ward off the negative physiological, performance-based, and emotional consequences of thinking bearish. So Jim was not a victim like David. He took the bull by the horns and moved on to his next task. And you know, that's a very important piece, because we're going to then go to words to take out of my vocabulary, which you're going to have at your disposal. These are considered absolute in nature and are the easiest ones to challenge using the bullish thinking monitoring logs that we'll go over next. These words that I have for you are often enter into our stream of consciousness when we experience a cycle of bearish thought. But they're, importantly, they're the easiest ones to disprove with rational historical evidence and bullish thinking. So you should be pretty much on the lookout for these words entering into your awareness when you're feeling particularly down or burned out or paralyzed. Let's turn to the next page. Always be closing. ABC, always be closing. Now, I know anyone in this audience today who is a financial advisor at some point in their career has heard this saying. This has been referred to as the ABCs of sales. However, I bet you didn't know how counterproductive this phrase can be for an advisor's confidence and mood. As I mentioned earlier with this vocabulary list, this phrase is referred to as an absolute thought or black and white thinking by psychologists. And it's very rigid, and it can set an individual up for immediate failure if followed too literally, because it leaves no room for error. If one always must be closing, then one must never fail or be rejected by anyone. This way of thinking, to me, is too idealistic and is not representative of how frequently advisors are turned down by prospective clients, especially on cold calls. This can also apply to your jobs in that if you're going after the cream of the crop clients, they tend to be elusive. You will not always close them right away. They may try to make you sweat it out while they're trying to decide whether or not to invest with you or someone at another firm. Thus, an individual presents to themselves an insurmountable goal that leads to frustration and eventually burnout. But it's important to remember, often it's the law of averages that allows us to succeed after a succession of failures. So, you know, if you do fail, you know, on even the best hitters in baseball fail 7 out of every 10 at bats. And to put things in proper perspective, to think that you might fail is okay, because it brings you one step closer to the final pot of gold at the end of the tunnel. So, you know, again, the Yankees are just building upon, this is a loss for them, but now they're going to build upon a whole new streak that they've got to start for themselves. And, you know, your next failure or rejection might be the next step closer to landing the big account that you've always wanted. Okay, well, this is where the audience participation seems to come in, because I'm going to need the audience to create a list for themselves. Actually, I just need one stressor. One of the most important or most significant stressors or negative events that you experience at work. And after I go over these examples of bullish thinking, I'm going to need to go to a caller to call in and give us one of those stressors, and I'll take you through it.
So let me just jump in for a second here and just say that we are going to, so if you would like to talk with us, Dr. Cass, and about a stressful thing that happens, you know, routinely happens at work, the operator is going to come on and just give you the instruction for how you get on the line. Please listen to her first if you think you might have interest in doing that, and then you'll hear about 60 to 75 seconds of silence while we give everyone a chance to write down the main thing that stresses them at work. Operator?
Yes,
ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to give an example, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone. You will hear a tone indicating you've been placed in queue. You may remove yourself from queue at any time by pressing the pound key. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the number.
Okay, you'll hear from me again in about 60 seconds.
And I'm actually going to give an example while they're thinking about things.
Okay.
An example of a stressor would be a client gives you an ultimatum and says, you have 2 strikes left, when you were a day late in organizing the transfer of his funds. That is an example of a stressor, and I'll go over that in a second when I talk about how to practically use bullish thinking monitoring locks.
Another 35 seconds. Okay, operator, I'm going to have to rely on you to tell us whether anybody has their hands raised out there.
Well, actually, we're not up to that point yet.
No. We're going to go through the...
I got to go through some some examples here, some practical examples that will help the audience understand how bullish thinking can help manage their day-to-day stresses more effectively and improve their overall quality of life and job productivity.
And then we'll circle back to...
Right. Oh,
okay, proceed.
So let's talk about your bullish thinking monitoring log that shows as a first example, hopefully some of you have this updated version that says David the financial advisor as a work event, where it says a client gives you an ultimatum, you have 2 strikes left when you were a day late in organizing the transfer of his funds. Now, if I have an advisor coming into my office, they have this already filled out because they write these out at the moment when they're feeling particularly bummed out or they're burnt out or they're frustrated, angry, or anxious. So when they're feeling those sensations, they write down what's going on in their world, environment, which is a stressor, and then what they're thinking initially. So David, he first thought when he wrote down on his bearish thinking log here, I'm too distracted, I screwed up, and he will take his money elsewhere, referring to his client. He also wrote down at that moment, I'm going to lose all my clients if I keep making simple mistakes. This will be a domino effect. I will lose my solid reputation and my business. Now, if you notice, I have underlined words there, and those are the vocabulary words, the absolute words that I told you about, the absolute bearish words that I told you to take out of your vocabulary because they set you up for failure. But they are the easiest to challenge. Let's now look at the next page. Also, we're going to keep going back and forth between these two pages. Let's look at Jim and his potential stressor here. He's facing a protracted market downturn. Many of my clients' portfolios are hurting. A new client calls at 9 a.m. to tell me that I'm incompetent because he's been losing money and his friend has done better with his investments. His first thought at the moment, embarrassed thought, was, I must be doing something wrong with my strategy. My money managers are obviously not doing their job, or I'm not doing my job. I'm going to lose mine soon. How about this? I should revamp my strategy and replace my poorly performing money managers or my assistants, my administrative staff. If I don't act quickly, I will lose this new client, as well as others who are nervous about this downturn in their investment. These are particularly bearish thoughts. Again, the underlying words are absolutes. This would apply to both financial advisors and investment management consultants. And by thinking this bearish, both individuals, both Jim and David, will have predictable bearish outcomes. Physiologically, increased heart rate, increased blood pressure, sweating, headaches, muscle tension, insomnia, fatigue. As far as performance-based markers, they'll have increase in hesitancy, second-guessing themselves. They'll be distractible, isolated. They'll start losing clients, and they'll have a decrease in their discipline and client-centered services and ability to handle and manage short-term losses and manage their clients' emotions. Emotionally, they'll be feeling high levels of anxiety, frustration, and anger, and their sense of control they would probably rate as being very low. Now, let's try to, basically, let's see if we can get David to directly manipulate the outcome of his day by challenging his initial bearish thought patterns that would bring him down. He will explore alternative ways of viewing his ultimatum that he received. As a solution-focused strategy, he's going to state, I'm going to take things one step at a time and write down everything. I will follow through with a to-do list and maintain an organized and disciplined practice. He also could say, to challenge his bearish thoughts, I have a proven track record in this business, and I developed a solid relationship with this client. He will leave his money with me to ensure positive returns down the road. Now, let's look at Jim, the financial advisor. Let's see how he can manipulate the outcome and challenge his bearish thoughts about the protracted market downturn. He could say, my strategy has been effective in the past. I will not second-guess my decisions or anyone that works with me, including money managers or administrative assistants. We will stick to our long-term investment strategy or my client's individual strategies. I will help my client understand the realities of investing and remind him or her of his stated or her stated risk tolerance and the long-term expectations that are required to minimize risk over time. The second thing he could say to himself is, I will stay disciplined and focused on my investment strategy. I will not be swayed by short-term market gyrations because the investor is bombarded by so much recent information. I will keep my clients grounded in reality and help them manage their reactions to short-term loss. I will make them money over the next 3 years. Now, these are all very healthy, more rationally based, positive ways of viewing those stressors, which will all lead to bullish outcomes, which, as you can see on the columns, they're very similar. They will have better reactions physiologically. Their performance will be vastly improved in terms of making more money and managing their clients' emotions. And although they might be experiencing symptoms of frustration, worry, and anger, it'll be at a lower level of intensity, which will make life more manageable at work. And their sense of control will really shoot up on the bullish outcome side of things. So this is what one of the benefits is to really shifting to a bullish mindset based on reality and historically based evidence. And now we're ready to see how well the audience has really, what they've gleaned from this whole presentation so far, and see if I can work through somebody with their stressor.
So I hope some people have queued up and have some things to bring to Dr. Cass's attention. Operator, do we have any callers?
Yes, we do. And our first example is from Eric. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Hi, Dr. Cass. I've been in the business now about 4 years. I've been having a problem with my cold calling technique, specifically it's meeting with ridicule from my colleagues, and I'm not quite sure why. It's criticized, and I think that's, you know, it's undermining here. I'm not quite sure how to deal with it. using your example there, you know, from the bear side, I'm thinking to myself, my pitch is just off. It must be weak. And by being weak, then I'm turning prospects off with an unintentional or a robotic feel to it. And again, just my bottom line is that the prospects, and to a degree my colleagues, the people I have to be successful with, aren't taking me or might never take me seriously as a Wall Street professional here. I'm just concerned about that.
Okay, well, you know, I got to, you know, commend you. You really, you know, have focused on, you know, a specific stressor, which is actually very common. So hopefully, you know, you're not the only fourth-year advisor who has experienced that feeling of, you know, like your pitch is, like, rather robotic at first, you know. And sometimes it does take, you know, trying out a few different strategies or techniques to actually get it down, whatever fits your personality style. So let's drill down on this bearish thought for a while here. You said to me, as I wrote it down while you were talking, my pitch must be weak. So you're already saying to yourself, my pitch is weak on every call you're making. You've already determined that it's lacking. So that's something you should be cued in on. Is you use the word must, which is an absolute term. It's part of the vocabulary I told you got to be careful about using.
Okay.
You also, you know, you said you're turning prospects off with that flavor, and you're being criticized by your colleagues, basically. Well, you know, have you ever thought that maybe this is their own issues that they're dealing with? Because, you know, cold calls are not for everyone. You know, to say that people will never take you seriously as a professional or want to give you business, never is one of those absolute words that we use, that we told you to be careful of, because you could probably find evidence, historical evidence, to the contrary, that people have. I mean, for you to be a fourth-year, you know, employee at a firm, you know, would you say that you've been successful in the past?
Yes. The I guess if we're a bullish thought and stuff, I know I've always been a top performer. You know, and despite, you know, what they say, I've been only doing the things that have worked for me in the past and have been able to keep me here for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as you mentioned before, you know, the law of percentages factor is there as well. I know eventually it is going to work and come around with that. So, it's just difficult to balance it out or find that transition from that bear to the bull side and stuff, but you sort of know in your heart what it is and stuff, but it's still difficult to move, if you will, just out of that mindset. You know what you have to do.
Right. Well, again, don't aim, just throw the ball. Look at your bearish, by you even writing down your bearish thoughts and keying in on those absolute terms like, you know, never and must, you know, you could then say to yourself, okay, I need to shift gears here because look at the outcomes. And that's the benefit of actually writing this stuff down.
I hadn't thought about it like that with the absolute words. I thought they were just words.
Yeah, but well, absolute means there's no room for, you know, that to be not true. So if you can come up with one thing to the contrary based on your history, and real evidence that's tangible, then you've disproved that entire initial thought. You know, like, people, has anyone ever taken you seriously as a professional?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah. You've disproved people will never take me seriously as a professional. And, you know, my pitch must be weak. Well, is it possible that, you know, just like the Yankees, you need to do some fine-tuning and figure and try on some different strategies of how you want to pitch your product? You know, and maybe, you know, one thing I recommend always is, you know, for a lot of people to avoid the robotic nature of it, I tell them to have pretend it's a conversation between you and one of your friends, and you're basically asking them to go to a party with you and talk to them in that kind of manner. You know, like you're inviting them into your world.
Okay.
And, you know, that's just some advice off the cuff.
But
if you were to think, if you were going to shift those gears, would you be able to see the difference between how bearish thinking affects your outcomes versus, you know, the bullish side?
I think I would. It seems very common sense. I think just the satisfaction thing, I'm trying to see who am I trying to satisfy here. Myself, my prospects, or my friends, or my colleagues, who I'm working with here.
And well, in the end, it's got to be you.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got to like the product that you're bringing to the table, and you've got to be confident with it.
And that's me.
And it's all in your head.
Yeah,
I want to interrupt for a second because we only have about another 10 minutes left, and I want to give other people a chance also to ask whatever questions they have. They can bring up another stressor, or they can ask questions that are that were provoked by Dr. Cass's presentation, or that maybe are a little bit outside, but that they still want to consult Dr. Cass on. So, operator, would you please one more time quickly give the instructions on asking questions, and then if there are questions, let's immediately go to those lines.
Certainly. If you wish to ask a question, please press star, then one on your touchtone phone. Next, we'll go to the line of Mike. Please go ahead.
Yes, I have a bit of anxiety, frustration sometimes when I try to reach somebody when it's a scheduled time. And have to understand that, you know, perhaps priorities change, their priorities, and try to get over that and move on to either reschedule or realize maybe this isn't something that's to be.
So when you said you're experiencing anxiety about that, what is it about the situation that makes you anxious that they're not where they're supposed to be and you're arranging your schedule around?
No, if it's a prearranged schedule, either a call or an appointment, and then that gets postponed or, you know, put off for whatever reason. Sometimes those are valid reasons, and I need to realize that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just the fact of, I forgot all about it. And, you know, that to me, if I make the effort to be professional and reach out at that time, I would expect reciprocal reaching. And it doesn't always come true. And I realize that's life, but, you know, I work to deal with that.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, part of this is expectation. You know, what you're going into in terms of your perception of, you know, you might be taking this as more of an insult than you need to be in terms of, you know, this person has this obligation to be there for me when they say they're going to be there. And yes, I mean, they should. But this is the business of being persistent, and, you know, these are individuals, especially if you're going for the cream of the crop, that are going to make your life very difficult. So you should almost be expecting to be cat and mouse with them and be able to think out of the box in terms of developing a strong enough relationship with that individual client to know how they tick, probably right up front, get a good history of them in terms of even jot down notes about their personality style. A lot of clients come to me even just to run by me some of their traits of their clients just so I can figure out with them how to best, you know, capture them. And, you know, a lot of times it takes a bunch of times to reschedule, and you should go into every one of those saying, you know, I'm really going to have to work. This is part of the game. This is part of the business. You know, it makes the victory that much sweeter when you actually capture them at the end and they end up being, you know, whale clients for you. And pretty much, you know, if you lock them into like a lunch, you know, that's a lot harder to turn down than a phone call. So it's your expectations that would be by shifting the from the more, you know, absolute expectation of people should always be on time, it should be more like, okay, I know that this is going to be a tough one and I'm going to try to work around it and finagle a way to keep him interested and get a better understanding of that person's profile early. Is that helpful?
Yes.
Okay.
Next question, operator.
Next we'll go to Seth. Please go ahead.
Hello, Dr. Cass.
Hi, Seth.
How you doing? I saw you live about a year ago. I enjoyed it immensely.
Ah, that's great to hear.
I got a question for you. I've been an advisor about 7 or 8 years straight out of school. Pretty much came in, did extraordinarily well, became a top performer within this industry pretty quickly. And the last year or so, it just kind of seems to be going downhill. Everything just seems to be, it just seems to be in a complete downward spiral. I'm getting anxious. I don't feel that I'm being supported by my firm, which considering my past performance, I feel warrants it a little bit. And I'm trying to figure out how what the best way is to kind of get at that.
Well, what's your bearish thought about it?
Well, I mean, I'm emotionally getting just extremely frustrated.
Right, that's the emotion. But what's the stream of thoughts? You know, like we said, Jim was saying, I must be doing something wrong with my strategy. You know, I'm going to lose my job soon. So, what are you saying to yourself when you're feeling anxious?
That I have to turn this around now. That this has to be taken. This has to be done immediately. And things along those lines.
So there's a sense of urgency that you're creating for yourself.
Exactly.
But is there anything really substantially frightening about it? Like, are you thinking maybe that people, that your company is just not concerned about your welfare? Or is it more like, they don't care about me?
That's a bit of it.
Okay.
It plays a part.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm just trying to flesh it out for you here. So that would be your bearish thought, and obviously, predictably, you'd know what the outcomes would look like by thinking that way because you're experiencing them right now. Well, what would you say, you know, just based on this whole workshop, I mean, you've seen me before, what would you say would be the bullish way of handling it in terms of what should you say to yourself to get out of this rut in terms of, you know, what are some options for you here?
Well, I guess there's a couple, that I've come up with. One is obviously looking to go elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of seems like an easy way out.
Right. So I would say, let me just break in because we're kind of running out of time here. I would also recommend for you, you know, in terms of solution-focused thinking, you know, and obviously the bullish thought here is I do have options. You just said it yourself. I have other options. I can go elsewhere. But you know what? That's always a last resort, I think, in this market in terms of job security. I think that you should also maybe be working on your assertiveness in terms of your skills and how you manage your branch manager, how you communicate with him or her. Maybe you need to be more assertive with your administrative assistant. Is that helpful?
It's a possibility. Yeah, it is helpful.
Did you think of anything else that you might think of to handle that?
I think I probably have to also take a step. No, I probably have to take a step further back and just kind of just assess the whole situation and maybe make some changes internally, just trying to figure out where to go from there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what you're saying makes sense.
Oh, okay, good. And you know, again, the bullish thought would be, you know, even if worst case scenario happens and you do go elsewhere, well, then you should view that as, you know, your first perception might be bearish and might be like, this is the end of the world. I'm not going to be able to generate new business. It should be more like, wow, this is a great chance for me to start fresh and start reset my business goals with a new firm and start a new mission for myself. And it's a new chapter. So that would be a more bullish way of perceiving that kind of a change if you do go that route. And I, you know, wish you the best of luck on either scenario.
Appreciate it.
All right.
On that upbeat note, unfortunately, we are running out of time. We have run out of time. I want to thank all of you on the call today. I'm sorry we couldn't take more calls, and we hope we will be able to do that in the future because the interactive nature of this has been is really what makes it interesting. I want to thank Dr. Cass very much. I also want to for his insights. I also want to urge you to participate in and register for the next session that Dr. Cass is going to lead roughly a month from now on Tuesday, November 8th, and it will be Dr. Cass on Channeled Rage for Managing Irate Clients and Office Politics. And we all know something about either one or the other of those things. So once again, Dr. Cass, thank you very much for your time today, and we look forward to connecting with you next month.
All right. Speak to you then.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you for calling the AT&T Teleconference Replay System.